Life goes on. A man become preeminent, he's expected to have enthusiasms. Enthusiasms. What are mine? What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy? Baseball. A man stands alone at a plate. This is the time for what? For individual achievement. There he stands alone. But in the field, what? Part of a team.
Teamwork.
Looks, throws, catches, hustles, part of one big team. Bats himself to live long day. Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, and so on. His team don't field. What is he? You follow me? No one. Sunny day, stanza full of fans. What does he have to say? I'm going out there for myself. But I get nowhere unless the team wins.
Team.
Jesus Christ.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Hi, now Ken, we all know that the moon is not made of green cheese.
Yes, that's true, Harry.
But what if it were made of barbecue spare ribs? Would you eat it then?
What?
I know I would. Heck, I'd have seconds. And then polish it off with a tall, cool Budweiser.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
Hell yeah.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
That's it.
You're feeling very baseball today.
Yeah, baseball. Team.
Team.
Team. Let that be a warning to you, Chez. We get nowhere
right.
Unless the
Don't
team
screw around, exactly.
it's official. Chez Pazienza now is the new co-host of the show.
Glad to be here. Very glad. I'm proud.
Not only that, we also have a new theme song, Chez. I figured with a new co-host, we ought to just abandon the sort of the silly Lounge Lizard song and start with something that's a little more pulse pounding.
Yeah, it's a very, very high quality 80s Andrew Blake porn. I like it.
So, yeah, it's pretty exciting. I wanted to thank Shannon Moore and Bill Corbett for filling in some of the blanks here over the last couple of weeks and really kind of saved me from having to do the show by myself after the departure of Elvis. And thank you so much, Chez, for stepping in and now becoming an official part of the show. I mean, I think it's really exciting.
I'm glad to. It's I had a good time when I filled in a couple weeks ago, so I'm back for more. Indefinitely.
And you sound great. We worked out your technical difficulties before the show with your microphone.
My
and
fucked up new Larry King mic is working very well. It even smells like Larry King. It's very old.
Are you wearing suspenders? Are you hunched over?
I am. Polka for the entire hour.
Chez Pazienza, hello.
That's right. What do they do with the groceries?
Magic markers. Are they really so magical?
Let me give you some garlic.
You know, I was following him on Twitter for a while, and I just decided to stop following him on Twitter because I thought that King's Things, his handle was @King's Things. I thought it was going to be like his old USA Today column, where he'd be like, wouldn't you just love a creamsicle about now? You know, it's just like all these random observations. And King's things was nothing like that. It was just...
Just the entire idea of anything called King's things just creeps me out when I think about Larry King.
Right.
What things is he talking about exactly? That frightens the hell out of me.
Yeah, does he have things left? I would think that by now, I mean, he's 110 years old. It would have fallen off.
He's had like 18 wives, which, you know, I think is, I'm getting there. I'm on my way.
He's had
That's my goal.
Yeah, he's had a heart attack for every wife, I think.
Exactly.
But anyway, so you have a fancy schmancy new microphone, and it sounds fantastic.
Thanks, cool. I'm glad it's working all right. It looks like a giant silver dildo. So,
that's like a legitimate microphone. It's like one of the microphones, like David Letterman has a microphone like that.
Oh well, a little bit, yeah. I mean, I figured if it is a dildo, I can then not only use it as a tax write off, but I can pleasure myself with it later. So it's all going
to
work out.
To quote Fight Club, is it a dildo or your dildo?
My dildo, right.
So, you know, I wanted to kind of highlight here and emphasize that for people listening, am I used to and accustomed to, you know, on this show, people constantly agreeing. You and I don't agree on everything.
No, not at all. But we agree on quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, we do. And usually what you and I don't agree on, we either find some common ground, or B, have what amounts to a really good, healthy debate without wanting to, you know, tear the other one's head off.
Well, that remains to be seen.
No. I mean, seriously, you know, you and I have talked and we've written back and forth on a couple things. I mean, you know, I'm not going to rat you out to Breitbart if that makes you feel any better.
Yeah, we have. That's one of the things that we definitely agree about. But needless to say, I do have a baseball bat here, and I'm ready to.
That's all right. I have all my teeth.
So
that was the lowest blow possible, by the way. The lowest fucking blow possible.
I have
to actually know Lee, but oh man,
I was tracking with you on that one. Yeah,
straight to hell for that.
Well, you know, speaking of you know, of friends in the blogosphere and things like that, we were both. Well, this is clearly not the most important issue of the week, but certainly it's something that that you and I were both blogging about this week, and or it's specifically today is the departure of Cenk Uygur from MSNBC.
You do pronounce it Cenk, right? That's the correct way.
Yeah, I always said Cenk, like with a J.
I always thought it was Cenk.
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
Believe me. I mean, my name's fucked up, so, you know.
Yeah, it was funny because I was said to the Bubble Genius lady was remarking that, you know, all of my friends have unusual names. And Buzz, who, you know, I was telling Bubble Genius, yeah, I had Buzz cut new bumpers for Chez. Yeah, and I'm realizing, good Lord. And then, you know, then I have kind of an unusual name, too. My first name, not so much, but my last name is somewhat unusual. And so, but I think they're certainly memorable, although strange. But
it's like that line from the movie The Crow. Don't any of your friends have grown up names?
So Cenk is gone from MSNBC. And
he is indeed out with a bang. Good for him.
Right. And he really kind of laid into them on his show. Which you can watch the video clip on YouTube or on the blog, either way.
You posted it.
Yeah, I posted it. You linked to it.
I should have, but didn't. Because I actually think that right off the bat, I think that it's worth – it's one of those examples of it being worthwhile to see what he says as opposed to reading, you know, oh, say the Huffington Post Cliff Notes version of what it is that he says, because they love to hype up everything. I mean, you know, most websites do. And he didn't really slam MSNBC, and he wasn't on this like massive tirade. He just, you know, he was kind of pissed, and he made some pretty good points. And I think that it's definitely a good idea to actually sit down and spend the 11 minutes seeing what he had to say.
Right. And the important thing in all of it was, I believe, some confirmation of something that at least I've observed over the past couple of years. And it's only recently, I think. I mean, it's sort of always been an issue with television where, you know, the whimsy of executives sometimes override numbers. But it's been more so lately. And I think especially since the rise of the quote unquote new civility, where, you know, what Cenk was basically saying in this video is that the ratings, his ratings started weak, got stronger to the point where I think in adults 18 to 34, he was actually beating Fox News. And in his 6 o'clock slot. And I don't know what he's up against. I guess Brett Baer maybe is at 6 o'clock on Fox News.
I think it's Baer.
Yeah. And so he was actually beating Fox News. Regardless, the way Phil Griffin approached Cenk was to say that some people in Washington, these ambiguous Washington types, were concerned about his tone.
Well, right off the bat, one word, this is one of the first things I thought when I listened to Cenk tell the story. One word makes all the difference. Saying people in Washington have a problem with what you're doing, to me, sounds different than him saying, look, I just got back from Washington and the people in Washington. The people, to me, sounds much more like, look, I was talking to NBC producers and the people in the bureau, those people, those are the ones who – what you're saying is making their jobs more difficult. By the way, I say that, you know, I don't know whether anything he said was actually making anybody's job more difficult. I don't even know if that, you know, fucking conversation took place. Mm. I have to trust Cenk's story that it did. And, you know, actually, no, I do know because, of course, Griffin confirmed it. So I'm going to assume that, yeah, it did happen. But I think it sounds less nefarious if you add the one extra word. Maybe I'm nitpicking here, but for some reason it just there's something. It sounds to me a little bit more evil the way Cenk tells the story.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think it's still. I think what he was saying is still somewhat accurate. I mean, I'm fairly certain that Phil Griffin was talking about people in the Washington Bureau, and then you know maybe by extension some of the you know sort of the DC elite cocktail party set. And because, I mean, it seems to me as if a lot of what's guiding decisions at MSNBC and some of their, let's shall we say, ancillary properties, their associated properties, is kind of, you know, let's protect our reputation. Let's do what everyone thinks is very serious and what's acceptable. And regardless of what the ratings are, we're gonna do what we think is good for our reputation and eliminate what we think is shrill or over the top, you know, something that's not in keeping with the new civility. It seems like that's predominantly what's happening. So you have someone like Cenk who might have
new civility. You mean like the Alan West memo, that kind of new civility?
Yeah, no, the right. Exactly. The I mean, obviously, the sort of the post Giffords shooting right. in Tucson, subsequently to that, everything changed. I mean, it was like almost in such a way that it was similar to 9/11, where after 9/11, everything became, well, everything in media changed. I mean, and it took many, many years to sort of wind itself back down again.
But thanks to social networking, the news cycle and our attention span and everything else now lasts days, hours sometimes. So I actually don't see it as having taken any time at all for us to, after the Gifford shooting, for us to kind of return to angry, pissed off business as usual.
Yeah, I guess, but in relative terms of disasters, I think, you know, maybe it was relative to the size, you know, the degree of the disaster in Tucson, you know, right. as it relates to the degree of the disaster on 9/11 and the impact of both. But it seems as though there's still, and, you know, I see this at the Huffington Post, to be perfectly frank. You can't say certain things anymore. And I'll be honest, completely honest here. And it's probably not good for me to even say this because I'm still loyal to the Huffington Post. I still write for the Huffington Post.
I was going to ask, do you still write for them as often as you, not as often as you used
no,
to?
No, not as often as I used to. It's been one of those things where I writing a full essay length piece once a week on schedule every Wednesday.
I always thought you were fucking crazy
for free. You know, I just need to, with the election season really getting ready to heat up. I mean, we're not even really into the primaries yet. I wanted to take a little breather from it and kind of recharge and kind of rethink my approach to that, because and this is exactly
how much you enjoy spending an entire day not getting paid.
That's exactly right. And it is it's a full day where you morning to night. I mean, and plus the subsequent day, you know, monitoring the comments, which, by the way, they don't let you do anymore. You can't admin your own comments anymore. I don't know if you noticed that, but
I know. No, the only thing I noticed, two things this week, because first of which is that they're obviously desperate for people, because they put me at the very top of the media page twice. This week, I think I'm at the top now. I don't know with the Jenk thing, but I also noticed that you can no longer, after something has been posted backstage, you can no longer go in and change it yourself. You have to contact the blog team, which has just got to piss off Stuart and David and all of them. It's got to, because I mean that makes their jobs that much more difficult.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, David, next to Roy Flumenbaum, is like the most overworked guy in that entire organization. I mean, he is. There's sometimes when I'm emailing him and it's late here, and I'm 6 hours behind the East Coast. It's late here, and he's still responding to me. I don't know how the hell he's doing it, but. You know, I was going to say, in my most recent column, I think I called Republicans stupid. In fact, you know what? I said they're not stupid, and I used the word stupid, though, throughout the body of the text. I said they're – I don't know what the hell it was I said. Something with regards to the Republicans being – yeah, I don't even remember my own goddamn column. But I wasn't allowed to call Republicans stupid. I had to actually change that to like willfully ignorant or something, or, you know, I had to just soften the language.
I get that a lot, obviously, because I mean, my language is just atrocious.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I knew going into it, and this is even before the merger. You know, I think I wrote a piece one time where Lindsey Graham shot himself in the head. It was like a fake, a fake story. And they made me change that. And I'm trying to think what else. Jesus. I called Eric Erickson a turd.
And of course, deservedly so. God. I mean, if there's anyone worthy of the word turd, it's Eric Erickson.
And that's exactly what I said. I'm like, you know, I said he's a I can't remember what the exact phrasing was, but I called him a turd or something like that, which, you know, yeah, you're right. If anybody fucking deserves it.
Yeah, my headline was the Republican spectrum of stupidity. That was the original headline, and it became, I had to change it to the Republican spectrum of ignorance.
Wow. Okay.
So I mean, you know,
that alliteration that makes for good news.
Yeah.
News copy.
You know, and it's we don't want to look shrill. We don't want to look like we're, you know, and this is something we do.
Why not? It's so much fun to look shrill.
Yeah, it really is. But you know what? I mean, I don't think either of us are necessarily shrill. We like to grab attention, but I think we always back up our shit with some real hardcore meat and potatoes, some real serious content. I mean, nature
I also think that you and I use profanity and make our points, which to anybody reading who doesn't obviously know the way we're speaking right now, it sounds like we're screaming. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when I write, I know that people reading are like, oh, you know, he's a fucking idiot. And I never say that. I basically, everything that comes out of my mouth is pretty much at this, you know, sort of David Duchovnian tone. you know, yeah. So I'm like, I think I wrote the other night, I said, this is the kind of thing they would never let me get away with at Huffington. I started off a piece by saying, and I believe this wholeheartedly, that Alan West is a fucking psychopath. Mm-hmm. He just is. He's, yeah. You know, I'm not shouting that. I'm just, it's true. He's totally fucking batshit. The man is bananas.
Yeah.
And I know they would never let me, even if I sort of altered that a little bit, they'd never let me get away with it.
Yeah, so right, and I've been running into that repeatedly over there, and you know, again, I'll play ball. I'm a team player. If they have changes to make, and if they explain those changes, and justify them to me, I'll just, well, fine, I don't care. You know, ignorance, stupidity, it doesn't really matter, because you're still gonna make the same point. I mean, I was still able to make the same argument that I made originally. It was just a matter of semantics. This is like, I can't say stupid. I've got to say, you know, ignorant, or, you know, but
it's also one more, the thing that sucks is that it's also one more hoop that you have to jump through that makes it just seem like writing for Huffington, even despite the very good exposure, let's face it, is not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And so, yeah, and I guess the other, speaking of layers or hoops, you can no longer, you have to save your stuff as a draft now. And then they go through and they look at it, and the editors sort of mod your piece.
Right.
And then they post it live. Because it used to be that you could actually just, you know, write what you had to say, you write your own headline, you put it up there, and you click post, and it posts. I mean, it's live as soon as you hit publish. But now it's not that way anymore. And again, you know, I kind of knew that when AOL took over there that things were going to kind of change, that it was going to be a little more stringent. It wasn't always going to be an idiot to believe that it was always going to be the Wild West sort of blog atmosphere, legitimately blogish atmosphere that it was when it started. It's just not that way anymore. Things
AOL
grow.
AOL doesn't want the inmates running the asylum. They've got these highly paid trained journalists who can run the asylum just fine.
Right. And also shareholders.
Exactly.
All of that. But yeah, so Jenk is...
Shareholders should come down and write some of this shit for free.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and that's and that's something else that I don't think is ever going to change. So, I mean, I kind of resigned myself to thinking, well, you know what? I'm never going to be paid over there. It's just to get angry and waving my fist and shouting solidarity at the top of my lungs, that just doesn't work. I mean, it's not going to get us. It's just, they're not going to ever pay blog. They're going to hire people maybe out of the blogger pool to maybe take on sort of. Another favorite of yours, sort of a Jason Lincoln's role.
I'm trying to throw it against Jason Lincoln's. He was the one who called me. What was it? Relentlessly dumb, I think he called me. That's all right. I like that.
I remember either you were feuding with Jason Lincoln's. So
I know. He out of nowhere, he wrote something really awful about me. That's. I think I can handle it.
But yeah. I mean, so he's got
a beard.
Yeah, right. And he runs.
It's true.
Yeah, he runs that sort of middle ground, that gray area between being a blogger and being a paid staff member. He is a paid staff member, but his tone is a little more bloggerish.
He is, and I actually, and I've said this before, just, beating up on me doesn't make me not like you, especially if you do it well. So, yeah, I mean, I've gone on to quote him a crap load of times, and I think he does a really great job over there.
So do you think, Cenk, that the way cable news is functioning right now, let's just narrow it to MSNBC. Is it really just a matter of Phil Griffin's reputation and the reputations of, the sort of the very serious executives and some of the on-air staff that want to keep things, kind of both sides are equally guilty, sort of ride this middle ground. They don't want to look too shrill or they don't want to look too liberal. Is that guiding the decisions over there? I mean, because I just see ratings as being more and more irrelevant anymore on that network, considering that, for example, Chris Matthews is on twice a night. I mean, it's a replay, live at 5, replay at 7. He's still got some of the lowest ratings on that network, or lowest ratings in all of cable news, still raking in millions of dollars a year. I know the most recent number I saw was $5 million. It could be higher than that since the recent renegotiation. What is the difference here? Are ratings even relevant anymore in cable news?
Of course they are. Yeah, I mean, ratings are still the guiding factor when it comes to when it comes to whether you stay, you go, whatever. I mean, if Cenk's numbers had been through the roof, he probably would still have a job. Obviously, if there's somebody who really can't stand him, or if there are a group of people who really can't stand him, then ratings may not save him. You're right when you say it. I don't think it matters quite as much as it used to. I think part of the reason is because I'm starting to think actually that as time goes on, things are becoming more format driven than they are anchor driven, which basically means that if the format's in place, I think that getting yourself a somewhat decent host isn't quite as difficult as it used to be. I mean, look. Let's face it, Cenk was given a chance. They at some point dug into the internet and dragged somebody up from, the farm league and said, okay, we're gonna let you take a shot at it. And whether it worked or not, it doesn't mean that it wasn't a hell of an experiment and that there won't be more. There aren't people waiting behind him. So, like I said, if Cenk's ratings had been spectacular, maybe, but. As for what really drove Griffin to get rid of him. That's something that you'll never know. You really won't. Cenk wants to cast himself as sort of like this noble warrior that he, you know, he pissed off the establishment. And you know what? And more power to him. He probably did to some extent, but I don't think that he is as powerful as he sort of thought he was. And I referenced that in the piece that I wrote today. You know, not really, not to slam him, because I think politically he and I have, you know, agree on a lot of things. I didn't much like him as a broadcaster, but, you know, it takes a pretty big ego to think that you are speaking such truth to power that the Beltway types cower inside their homes and they're afraid to come out, you know, at the sign of Big Bad Cenk. What really happened, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not too into the whole, you know, chest thumping. I stood up to the man and lost, or I stood up to the man and won, regardless of which
I have an issue with him as a broadcaster, because and I'm already getting beat up at Huffington by people who, because I use the word that he's not polished, he's unpolished, and I'm already getting beat up by, you know, the asshole committee, the peanut gallery, who are like, well, I don't want Ken and Barbie. You know, no, enough of that. And I'm like, by saying unpolished, that was my really, really nice way of saying that Cenk fucking talks like he's got marbles in his mouth. He can't pronounce shit to save his life. I asked for very little out of my television hosts, but the ability to enunciate correctly each syllable in a word, that's kind of important if you're going to be on television, I think, just a little bit. And that used to drive me crazy. So the sort of in-your-face, rah, you know, that crap, when Schultz does it, it pisses me off, but I think Schultz is better at it. When Cenk did it, it was just kind of made my spine turn to glass.
Well, I mean, here's the big difference between Cenk and Ed Schultz. I mean, Ed Schultz is driving me batshit anymore. Ed Schultz is so phony baloney. It's hard to even get through the first 30 seconds of it.
The indignation gets old very fast.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and I've been calling it manufactured outrage. It really is. The staging of it really is beginning to look transparent. It's really showing as though he's amping himself up to put on a show, and it doesn't seem genuine to me. With Cenk, he seems real. He seems like what he's saying he believes.
I respect his passion. I honest to God do. I may not, you know, think he's a very good broadcaster. I think he's got, and I think he has the potential to be good. You know, I think I wrote today that Griffin, if he made the decision to kind of relegate him, as much as, you know, you can piss on corporate all you want, but from just a television perspective, if Griffin made the decision, if he said, look, I don't, you know, this guy's a little bit too, he's too rough around the edges, which he is, you know, maybe give him a little bit of time in a slightly less important place. If that's true, then I can't argue with that. I can't argue with Griffin saying that. Yeah. But regardless of the fact that Cenk is rough around the edges, I do respect the passion. I respect what he's trying to get across, which is obviously he really genuinely gives a shit. And that's important.
Well, I mean, I went back and looked at some of the numbers, and they're not that bad. I mean, when all of MSNBC is down, Cenk was down too. I mean, and look, 6 o'clock isn't a huge hour for cable news viewing, especially for those people who would probably be inclined to watch Cenk. A lot of people at 6 o'clock, they're still driving home from work, for God's sake,
right,
at least on the East Coast. And so I don't know that he was given that fair shake that someone drawn up for the internet could have been given. I mean, if
don't ever, ever wait for somebody to be given a fair shake in the modern network. I mean, really, in the modern network climate.
Yeah.
We're now living in a world where TV shows are canceled after one episode.
Yeah.
That was unthinkable years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, I'm under no delusions that suddenly, you know, cable and television is giving people long gaps of time to find an audience. I mean, the days of, you know, like Seinfeld took a few years and a lot of trial and error to find its audience. They moved it around. They, you know, they greenlit it for 3 episodes here,
right,
5 episodes there, finally found its audience. That doesn't happen anymore. I mean,
right. What's funny, actually, my favorite story regarding NBC and that sort of ethos is 30 Rock, because 30 Rock, for all intents and purposes, should have been canceled after the first season. Its ratings weren't all that great. Critics loved it, and it had a good cult following, but that's not enough to keep you on the air these days. What kept it on the air is that Tina Fey was, oh my God, fucking brilliant. All the little inside jokes that she makes at NBC's expense about corporate synergy and about, you know, the sort of joking about how NBC constantly cross-promotes across entities, cross-pollinates. She was doing it to make fun of it, but she also knew full well that by doing it, she was actually doing it. She was doing the cross-pollination. She was promoting NBC product. And NBC basically saw 30 Rock as a half-hour commercial for itself. Mm-hmm. So that's why they were much less, you know, that saved them for two seasons, easy.
Yeah. So I guess putting your personal feelings about Cenk aside, do you believe that Phil Griffin made the right choice by dropping this guy?
Wow. You know,
and I should.
I probably would have moved him. He's obviously, look, Cenk is not a regular news anchor. So he's not, they're in a bind with him because they know full well that even though MS leans left, their daytime programming is, you know, it's pretty straight ahead. So they can't just take Cenk and dump him on, you know, noon. Because he has to be able to speak his mind, like he says. So really the only thing they can do is put him from 5 o'clock on, you know. Do I think he maybe deserved a little bit more time to possibly get it together? Or if they got – imagine this. When I used to work at NBC, I worked for a guy named Don Brown. Don used to be – I think he was VP of NBC News at one point. Don used to say it was almost like Colonel Jessup in A Few Good Men. You know, imagine if we train him. And yeah. Don's attitude was, fuck it. If I hire you and you fail, I failed. So – you know, instead of doing an interim thing, what they should have done is, I mean, I like the idea of them trying him out, but they should have said, okay, look, they should have sat down with him and really seriously coached him on what makes for good television broadcasting. Maybe they did. I don't know. Do I think he was ready for prime time, so to speak, and prime time being for cable being 6 o'clock? No, probably not. Do I think he has potential? Yeah, actually, I do.
Well, I mean, here's the big tell, though. I mean, because they're replacing him with Al Sharpton.
Even get me started. You got to be fucking kidding me.
Come on. I mean, you talk about a bullshit move that exposes exactly all of the things that I'm saying. If they're worried about ratings, if they're worried about professionalism, if they're worried about having someone who's credibility, worried about having someone a little more moderate on at six. Right. You don't
not just that, from a broadcasting perspective.
Yeah,
from fucking broadcasting perspective, Sharpton can't find his asshole with two hands and a fucking asshole map. He is intolerable on air. I mean, in addition to being, you know, a malignant narcissist fuckwad, he just is. He is so absolutely terrible on air. He may as well be doing, you know, he may as well be on Aurora basic, you know, public access cable next to Wayne's World.
Yeah. Well, that's something that happens all the goddamn time, regardless of what network it is, where they're constantly sticking non-broadcasters into broadcast roles. And it never works. And they can really try. They did it with Andrea Mitchell, who is like, you know, you can drive a truck through her pregnant pauses and stammers. It's un-fucking believable that, you know, great. She's a great reporter. She's got a lot of contact. She's married to Alan Greenspan, for God's sake.
So obviously she's got a lot of time that isn't taken up by getting laid.
Right. And so they stick her on for an hour and she can't read a cue card, for God's sake.
Yeah. She's a fine reporter. She's just not good. Look, and you know something? For all the shit you hear about people bitching about Ken and Barbie anchors and so on and so forth, there is no denying that it does take something, a certain quality, And maybe it is a show-off quality. Who knows? Maybe it is being vapid. Who the hell knows? But it takes a certain quality to be a good television host, to be able to sit there and read and broadcast. You know, for everybody like Keith Olbermann, who as much of a pain in the ass as he was, is a brilliant broadcaster. He is excellent. And so is, you and I talked about this before, so is Beck. Say what you will about Beck. Oh, my God, can the man talk? He's great. You know, what he says is shit, but the way he says it is spectacular.
Yeah, the same goes for Limbaugh. I mean, then there's guys like Mark Levin, whose voice sounds like, you know, a weed whacker that's lost its twine or whatever. You know, it's like a weed whacker out of control. There's so many non-broadcasters doing broadcasting right now.
And not everybody should do it. There's no doubt about it. I always say, you know... I've said this, and I will say it to anybody who listens. One of the best television news anchors I've ever met in my life is Rick Sanchez. Say what you will about him as a person. Holy shit, is the man a good anchor. Mm-hmm. He can ad-lib about a blade of grass for 6 weeks if you need him to. He demystifies TV, which means that when something goes wrong, instead of looking flustered and weird, he says, "Oh, let me tell you just what happened there." And, you know, and it's kind of hammy, but it's great television.
Yeah. And so, I mean, all of news would be much better off if they combine real broadcasters – with actual journalism. I mean, and that's the whole thing. I mean, we're not talking about putting talking heads on television who can read a prompter fluidly and can speak extemporaneously when they need to. We're talking about combining that with serious journalism, and it's just not happening. Then when you take away that, I mean, we don't even have real broadcasters and no real journalism. That's what's plaguing cable news right now. It's this perfect storm of bullshit. And so, so with Al Sharpton in that spot, it just highlights, first of all, everything that I'm saying, because I'm saying that Cenk had decent numbers. Cenk was inflammatory. All the things that Cenk was fired for, Al Sharpton does not mitigate. Al Sharpton doesn't fix all of those things. So there's something weird going on.
That's the really tough thing. Yeah. That's the hardest part of all of it for me. And the piece, you know, I've written a bunch of shit, oh my God, about Sharpton. You know, he's one of my favorites. That goes back ways. That's like, that's greatest hits of Deus Ex Malcontent there. I mean, the thing to me that just makes my head spin is the idea that, okay, well, you got rid of Cenk, who, you know, was rough around the edges. Once again, he wasn't a great broadcaster, so on and so forth. And you brought in this guy who's just, you know, who's a fucking attention whore hack, and who's amateur, who doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He's terrible on air. You know, he's awful. And if you think you're going to be able to control Sharpton, are you fucking kidding me? People have been trying to control Sharpton for 40 years, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah, I mean, if they were sticking Jonathan Roberts in there or something, or who's the other guy? There's one guy who's a really slick broadcaster on MSNBC. He's a fill-in host. I think it's Thomas Roberts. That's
Thomas
his name.
Roberts. Thomas Roberts. Thomas is one of, I think, like two openly gay people. Him and Don Lemon are like the only two gay guys.
Yeah.
They'll probably hook up.
Right. But I mean, they're good. I mean, they're good at delivering the news, and they're good at hosting those shows.
They are.
I mean, if they were really looking for someone who can just interview guests, present the news, and fill the hour... Then Thomas Roberts. Well, they'll have Thomas Roberts on there. That they go with Al Sharpton, despite what they were criticizing Cenk about. I think Al Sharpton vindicates what Cenk is saying in that video.
I do think you're right about that. What you were saying about journalism versus journalism and broadcasting, what they should be going for at 6 o'clock, in my very humble opinion, you know, you're talking about going up against Brett Baer anyway, and Brett Baer's a dud, but he's doing for the most part a news show.
Yeah.
Find yourself a Shepard Smith. Go out there, find somebody like that. Shep is great.
Yeah.
He really is. Not only is he smart and funny, he's a really, really good broadcaster. He speaks incredibly well. Once again, another guy who came up through SVN with me and can ad lib about a blade of grass, just like Sanchez. And he's really, really good at what he does. That's, I think, what MSNBC should be looking for that particular hour. Instead of having the shout fest or, you know, the screaming match or whatever, do something a little bit different.
But again, who the people they elevate at MSNBC are people they know behind the scenes. That's just what it seems like. And I, you know, again, I could be terribly wrong. I'm filling in a lot of blanks with hypothesis here, but it seems
Rocky
like
DNA.
Yeah, well, exactly. I don't know exactly if that's what's happening in the cocktail party set, but you know, they get along with Andrea Mitchell off the air. And they bring in Pat Buchanan because Pat Buchanan off the air is a funny, evidently apparently this really affable guy who everyone gets along with. So they keep having him on despite all of the pro-Hitler shit that he writes about in his column and all the rest of it. Somehow he still manages to plow forward. And I think it's all about relationships. It's very Hollywood that way.
I don't need to tell you that the Beltway, more so than anything else, unless you're in New York New Media, which is also very clicky. But no, the Beltway is the most cliquish, childish. If you're not part of us, if you don't play the game, then we're not interested in what you have to say. And certainly there is no denying that to some extent, someone like Cenk, being an outsider, being somebody who came up even from the internet, you know that there are people, when I got canned from CNN, I wrote about this, that the networks tend to kind of look down on internet people, even though they accept them more now. You just know that the Beltway types, the cocktail party types, look at somebody like Cenk, who once again is rough around the edges. Mm-hmm. And you know, they just say, who the fuck is this gorilla?
Right.
You know, really?
Right.
Who do you think you are?
Exactly. And he's no more or less rough around the edges than... especially Andrea Mitchell. I don't know how the hell she ended up, much less Al Sharpton. But the show, brand new name for the show, even though Bubble Genius is still with us. It is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez show now. Bubble Genius is the exclusive sponsor of the show. And we're going to hear from the Bubble Genius ladies right now.
Bubble Genius presents the Bobby and Chez Pee Break.
Run, guys.
Welcome, Chez.
Yeah. So, on to less pleasant things. That was no lady. That's my representative.
What the F?
We're mouthy broads, and we're not going to let a comment like that go by.
Yeah, lady this, you yutz. What kind of comment is that?
Exactly. What a jerk. So, that's why Bubble Genius is proud to support progressive causes and candidates.
Yeah, to keep asshats like Alan West out of Congress.
So, if you want to help out with that, you can go to our political or causes pages on our website.
You know, www.bubblegenius.com.
You guys done yet?
Well, thanks for listening.
Exactly. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, keep clean and, keep doing the good out there.
We are Bubble Genius and we approve this message.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Need more listeners, as always, more subscribers on the iTunes. So go and subscribe if you haven't already. And when you go to bubblegenius.com, what's that?
I'm in dire need of having a woman shove me into her pants.
See, one of the perks of being on this show is you get to be hauled around in the pants of... Well, I mean, I guess it's a double-edged sword.
It's good. That'd be terrific. That's the whole reason I'm here. That's why I've done everything throughout my entire life, is in a relentless, sad, desperate, pathetic pursuit of getting laid.
Now that you're a single man, you can enjoy your time
and
being hauled around.
And will be forever, thanks.
But it is a double-edged sword. I mean, there might be a big, sweaty, fat guy who's got a great, great iPod. Like Brandon, like one of the 80-gig iPod touches, and he's hauling you around in those big, sweaty shorts.
Oh, lovely.
But put in your promo code AWESOME, AWESOME, for 15% off your entire order at bubblegenius.com. It's the best goddamn soap in the world. So I want to talk a little bit about what's happening with the debt ceiling at this point. I had a couple of polls on the blog today that kind of underscored where the American people are right now and the disconnect between what's happening in Washington and what's happening in with everyone else, essentially, because what's happening in Washington is completely divorced from reality. I mean, the whole idea that we're going to cut spending at all, and then we're going to leave taxes alone, we're not going to raise taxes on rich people, is not, by super majority margins, not what people want. There's a recent ABC News Washington Post poll. God, I almost called you Cenk.
You actually already did earlier. I didn't think you noticed.
I called you Cenk?
That's okay. Hold on. Let me see if I can. Let me try to mispronounce some words for you. I'll start flailing my arms wildly and yelling at you. I suck. Man. I'm just kidding. I actually think, like I said, you know him. I'm sure he's a fantastic guy.
Yeah. Well, I meant to call you Elvis. I mean, wow, shit. So ABC News, Washington Post poll. In these various categories, the American people vastly supporting tax hikes on rich people and corporations. By a margin of 59% to 39%, people want to raise taxes on oil and gas companies. Margin of 61%, the American people want to raise Medicare premiums for the wealthy. 64% want to raise taxes on hedge fund managers. 66, well, that's shooting, you know, fish in a barrel. 66% want to increase Social Security taxes on people earning $107,000 plus, which is sort of what I've been calling for, which is just remove that cap altogether. In fact, you're removing the cap on the payroll tax. Instead of actually removing the cap, we got to start the payroll tax at $107,000. Not even bother with anyone earning less than that. Just everyone who's earning more than that, they're the ones paying into Social Security tax. And 72% of American people want to raise taxes on people earning $250,000 plus. But nevertheless, we're still going to it looks like we may end up doing a deal that doesn't have any revenues in it whatsoever, though. I'm just kind of in a holding pattern on that. I don't know what the hell is going to happen from day to day. So I just kind of stopped speculating.
I'm just waiting to hear what the new Gang of Six album sounds like, because I was a big fan of entertainment.
And then there's this other Gallup poll. What do you think is the most important problem facing the country today? And where where do you think deficit and debt?
Write down somewhere below whether or not the male vampires will kiss on True Blood. I don't know.
That's about right. About 16%. 16% of the American people are like deathly afraid of the deficit and debt, while 27% think that unemployment and jobs is the most important problem. 31% say the economy in general. So you're talking about jobs and the economy. That's 56% or 58%. I'm sorry, 58% think that that's the most important thing. Oh, to only 16% are concerned about the deficit and debt. And my hunch, those people are predominantly Tea Party members. They're Tea Party.
Yeah,
people.
It's amazing to think that I bring up this movie line all the time because it's such a shit movie. But one of a line that I seem to wind up going back to quite a bit was from Armageddon. It's the scene where I think it's Jason Isaac plays the doctor or the physicist, and he's talking about how to blow up the asteroid. One of the guys in the room with him says, you know, one of our best scientists says that if you fire a missile at it, it'll destroy it. He's like, I went to MIT with him. Right now, you don't want to trust a guy who got a C in astrophysics. And I always think that whenever I hear anybody really fucking dumb offering their opinion on something very serious, in this case, Tea Party are saying, well, you know what? We know what's best, what the best way is to get out of, to get out of this bad economy. No, actually, you don't. You don't know shit.
Yeah. Well, the worst thing about it is there's no math to it whatsoever. I mean, there are actual multipliers where you can look at ways to grow the economy, ways to create jobs. There's no mystery to it. The numbers don't lie. If you look at the multipliers, and Moody's put together the multipliers in terms of every dollar spent on tax cuts, what kind of benefits does that reap? It turns out that for every dollar spent on tax cuts, you only get about 37 cents worth of economic stimulus. That's a loss. I don't know if anyone would invest that. Oh, yeah, you know what? I'm going to invest $1,000 in this this company that sucks and then only get $370 back. That's a stupid, stupid investment.
Of course.
But whereas alternatively, if you spend money on infrastructure, for every dollar spent, you get $1.78 back in terms of stimulus. That's a good investment. I mean, there's no mystery.
Yeah, but you're listening to those liberal studies. That's
And Newt Gingrich did call it liberal math.
Liberal math. Wow. Just stop for a second. Just marvel at that. The entire idea that math somehow is up for debate. Mm-hmm. That's just astonishing.
Yeah. And these are numbers from Moody's. Moody's is not this liberal apparatchik. I mean, they're not out there endorsing the Rachel Maddow show. They're not, you know, they're not, you know, the guys from Moody's aren't on Keith Olbermann all the time. I mean, they're very important, very serious people. And if they say for every dollar spent on infrastructure, you get $1.78 back in stimulus, I'm pretty much betting on that one. Meanwhile, Wall Street Journal. Yeah, I'm going to quote the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
They're not in any sort of trouble right now, are they? But this is actually serious news. I mean, there's nothing wrong about this news story as near as I can tell. Companies are laying off employees at levels not seen in nearly a year, hobbling the job market and intensifying fears about the pace of the economic recovery. Cisco Systems, Lockheed Martin, troubled bookstore chain Borders Group, Inc., are among those that have recently announced hefty cuts, while recent government numbers underscore how companies have shifted toward cutting jobs. The increase in layoffs is a key reason why the U.S. recorded an average of only 21,000 new jobs over the past 2 months, far below the level needed to bring down unemployment, which now stands at 9.2%. So, I mean, the one thing that has to happen beyond anything else is you got to be spending more money. And I think from what I've been hearing, the calculus behind the way the president is approaching the debt ceiling negotiations is that if he, and he even actually kind of said this in his most recent morning press conference appearance, is that if money is, if we start to look at balancing the budget, getting things in order financially, that we can then invest in all kinds of new infrastructure and all kinds of new government spending. If we've got sort of in this ambiguous way, if we've got our checking account balanced, which I'd like to think that's true, but I'm not sure how cutting spending and not raising revenues and then spending more in 2 years is actually going to help things now. I think what's going to happen is as soon as you start cutting spending in an environment where no one is spending, that's going to create a deeper hole. So any compensatory spending 2 years from now, after he's re-inaugurated, hopefully, then I think it's going to be too late because we're already on sort of a shaky path at this point.
It's one of those stories that, especially as the time draws nearer and nearer, I find myself like shutting it off, and I know I shouldn't. But it's so frustrating and it's so agonizing and aggravating that it just boggles my mind and it becomes very, very difficult to watch. I mean, I'm the bottom line for me is I'm still trying to figure out why exactly raising the debt ceiling is a big deal. This is one of those things that there should be no argument about whatsoever. There never has been in the past. It's never been politicized, but it goes to show just how absolutely, you know, I won't use the both sides meme because I do think that it's mostly the Republicans. And I don't say that as somebody who is a diehard Democrat. I say that as somebody who accepts reality. But the bottom line is that we are so polarized as a country that even the littlest, stupidest, tiniest thing has to be turned into a massive battle, especially because the Republicans won't give a fucking inch. Mm-hmm. They just won't. They will – whatever it takes – to avoid allowing any kind of a victory, and you've written about this a ton of times. I'm not sure how often I've touched on it, but you know, you harp on it quite a bit that they are willing to burn the fucking world down if it means that they can get back in the White House. It honestly, I genuinely don't think it matters if there's no country left. If like we have become the planet of the apes, and you know, and honestly, we're, you know, there are roving gangs of you know, marauding gangs of bicycle gay guys like in The Road Warrior killing people in the streets. As long as they get – if that's the kind of country they inherit, they could give a shit as long as they're back in the White House and in control of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've said as much. I mean, they're looking for the president to fail. They want to sabotage the economy. Right. So they're therefore going to sabotage the president. You know, but the thing is that I'm not so willing to call their bluff on this, because I do believe that the Tea Party is nihilistic. The Tea Party is waiting for the economy to fail. I mean, they again, and the Republicans are echoing this, but you know, they're willing to do it. And as long as they're willing to do it, you kind of have to take them seriously, as infuriating as it might be. And regardless of whether or not they do it, the spending cuts that will be part and parcel of the deal will hurt the economy. I mean, we know it. I mean, we know. You start reducing spending, regardless of what it is. You reduce spending on defense, for God's sake. Defense spending is, whether we like it or not, is stimulus. Defense spending creates or saves jobs. Any sort of spending is going to help the economy. And certainly we can pick and choose. We don't want defense spending
exclusive. And when we don't spend, then what's going to happen is when, you know, the kind of like the very small stimulus, when it doesn't pay big dividends in the form of, you know, lots of jobs and lots of growth, then, you know, Obama gets blamed for it.
Yeah. Well, there was another a piece. God, I forget who wrote it. But they basically they assembled a number of things that will occur if the debt ceiling isn't raised. Now, aside from economic chaos, which is going to happen if they don't raise the debt ceiling, we default on our debt, which, by the way, they should have done this months ago. And Timothy Geithner has been playing with the numbers to extend it to August 2nd. Just want to pass that along. We're past the deadline. We've just been playing, and the August 2nd deadline is the drop dead deadline. But these are
the true
things.
Deadline,
right? So these are the things that would fall off if we allow the debt ceiling to the debt ceiling deadline to pass without increasing it. The nation's nuclear arsenal is no longer being watched or maintained. The doors of federal prisons have been thrown open because none of the guards will work without being paid, and the vendors will not deliver food, medical supplies, electricity, etc. The border control stations are entirely unmanned, so anyone who can buy a plane ticket or stroll across the Mexican border is entering the country. All the illegal immigrants currently in detention are released since we don't have the money to put them on a plane, and we cannot actually simply leave them in a cell without electricity, sanitation, or food to see what happens. All of our troops stationed abroad quickly run out of electricity or fuel. Many of them are sitting in a desert with billions worth of equipment and no way to get themselves or their equipment back to the U.S. Our embassies are no longer operating, which will make things difficult for foreign travelers. No federal emergency assistance or help fighting things like wildfires or floods. Sorry, tornado people. Sorry, wildfire victims. Try to live in the Northeast next time. Housing projects shut down, and Section 8 vouchers are not paid. Families hit the streets. The money your local school district was expecting at the October 1 commencement of the 2012 fiscal year does not materialize, making it unclear who's going to be teaching your kids without a special property tax assessment. The market for guaranteed student loans plunges into chaos. Hope your kid wasn't going to college this year. The mortgage market evaporates. Hope you didn't need to buy or sell a house. The FDIC and the PBGC suddenly don't have a government backstop for their funds, which has all sorts of interesting implications for your bank account. The TSA shuts down. But don't worry about terrorist attacks, you TSA lovers, because air traffic control shut down, too. Hope you don't have a vacation planned in August, which much less any work travel. Unemployment money is no longer going to the states, which means that pretty soon it won't be going to the unemployed people. So these are just some of the things that if you shut down, I think it's like 40%
of David Lee Roth rejoins Van Halen.
David Lee Roth rejoins Van Halen. Dogs and cats sleeping together.
Sleeping together, all right. Mass hysteria.
Mass
basically
hysteria.
The worst parts of the Bible.
The worst parts of the Bible, right, right. So, I mean, these are the things we're kind of toying with right now. And I'm, as time goes on, just the little bits and pieces of things I'm hearing from Congress and the Republican leadership, it seems like something's going to happen. It seems like they're going to, somewhere or another, they're going to raise the debt ceiling. I mean,
they have to. I get it. I know. Children, really. Yeah. They are absolutely children.
Yeah.
And I do, in spite of, you know, whatever kind of arguments you may have about some of the things that Obama has and hasn't done, and I have them. I have plenty of them. But he is, at the moment, from what I can see, the only real adult in that room.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of how much these people act like children, I can't – call me naive. I cannot believe that they would burn down the world economy. You know, I mean, I know that they would do it to get back in office. I'm not sure that they would do it right – you know, that they would allow that kind of chaos immediately. I just, you know, I mean, shit, I could be totally wrong. I mean, a couple minutes ago, I said that, you know, I said that it was entirely possible. So,
well, you know,
circles.
I know exactly what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, because it seems unlikely.
My faith ebbs and flows. I have 2 seconds. I'm like complete chaos. It's just absolute nihilism. The world is black. You know, fields of rippling weed. I become Woody Allen in Love and Death. And then like 5 seconds later, I'm like, no, you know what? We got to hold on to hope. Hold my hand. Kumbaya fucking ya.
It's so difficult to get a read on what exactly they're going to do. On one hand, I'm going, you know what? They're crazy. And this was actually the point of the Huffington Post thing I wrote, that I wasn't allowed to call them stupid. I don't think they're stupid. I think sometimes they're willfully ignorant for political purposes. And I think what's happening right now is that they're being willfully ignorant as a means of pandering to the Tea Party.
You're absolutely right, because they are willfully ignorant as shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Tea Party has the Republican Party gripped by the nutsack right now. And I don't know that they're going to let go. And I think if Mitch McConnell and John Boehner and even Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan and all these guys, regardless of what they say in public, if they allow the debt ceiling to be raised, the Tea Party is going to go batshit. And they will primary all of these guys. They will hit them at their town hall meetings in August.
They're going to do it anyway, though. The voters are going to kick everybody out again, and it's going to continue like that until the end of fucking time.
Yeah. But, I mean, I would not want to be any of the Republicans who vote for the debt ceiling increase throughout the month of August. I just think that the town halls are going to be insane. Wait, and quite entertaining, for that matter. Because I want to see the Tea Party unleashed on their own. Because that's really what I'm savoring. Best case scenario, they don't raise they do raise the debt ceiling, and then the Republican Party falls into chaos. That's what I want. That's what I want. Not chaos for the economy, which is what would happen if the debt ceiling isn't increased. I want chaos for the Republican Party. Debt ceiling increased, the world saved, chaos. President looking good, and then the Republicans just getting the shit kicked out of the Tea Party. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez show. Contrary to what I said earlier, it's not the Bubble Genius Bob and Jenk show. The exclusive sponsor of the show is BubbleGenius.com. It's the best goddamn soap in the world. Bath and body products for the whole family. They strive to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants.
And what?
Surfactants. I still have no idea what the hell surfactants are. I just like to say surfactants.
Oh, okay. It's a triple word score word.
They've got something for everyone, from guys to girls to kitties to expectant mothers and even your best friend. They've got their dog soap is, I mean, it's actually good for humans, too. It smells great. They even have a few things for your home. And their famous political poodoo dolls.
Get rid of those fleas I've been trying to get rid of for a while.
That's right. Here's the latest message from Bubble Genius.
Bubble Genius presents the Bobby and Chez Pee Break.
Run, guys.
Welcome, Chez.
Yeah. So, on to less pleasant things. That was no lady. That's my representative.
What the F?
We're mouthy broads, and we're not going to let a comment like that go by.
Yeah, lady this, you yutz. What kind of comment is that?
Exactly. What a jerk. So that's why Bubble Genius is proud to support progressive causes and candidates.
Yeah, to keep asshats like Alan West out of Congress.
So if you want to help out with that, you can go to our political or causes pages on our website.
You know, www.bubblegenius.com.
You guys done yet?
So thanks for listening.
Exactly. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Keep clean and, keep doing the good out there.
We are Bubble Genius and we approve this message.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
That's what it's called. Put in your promo code AWESOME, AWESOME, and get 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. You got to support liberal businesses. If I see you at Walmart, I'm going to rip your tongue out by the roots.
They are really cheap, though.
Yeah. But you know, you want the, if you want serious soap that smells great and does a fantastic job cleaning your filthy, filthy skin, go to Bubble Genius and get all your soap there. Suddenly,
I'm getting turned on. It's like being back with Mom Piper Laurie again. You are dirty.
That's right. It's the beginning of, you know, I think of the beginning of The Aviator, where like Howard Hughes got to scrub himself with that pumice stone. You know what? We should probably talk about Alan West. I mean, the Bubble Genius ladies mentioned Alan West. You mentioned Alan West earlier. I mean, in case you missed it, here's the story. A Republican congressman from Florida turned to email on Tuesday to call a Democratic colleague from the state, quote, vile, despicable, and cowardly after she called into question his stance on Medicare during the debate over a spending cap and balanced budget bill before the House. Representative Alan West, a first-term Republican from South Florida, wasn't shy about his online outburst. He sent his peppery email to numerous lawmakers, as well as his target, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee. The subject line of the email read, "Unprofessional, inappropriate, sophomoric behavior from Wasserman Schultz." The email said,
"And then
look,"
he went on to engage in completely sophomoric and unacceptable behavior.
That's right. He said, "Look, Debbie, I understand that after I departed the House floor, you directed your floor speech comments directly towards me. Let me make myself perfectly clear. You want a personal fight? I'm happy to oblige. You are the most vile, unprofessional, and despicable member of the U.S. House of Representatives. If you have something to say to me, stop being a coward and say it to my face. Otherwise, shut the heck up."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not the least bit crazy. That's a completely natural response that any sane person would give. He is not just crazy. West is dangerously crazy. West is Tom Cruise crazy.
Yeah.
He is. I think I was telling a friend of mine the other day, I can, honest to God, and this is the kind of thing that I could never write at Huffington, one of the things that I could never write, I can honestly see West, like, I have this perfect image in my mind of him sitting, like, in his living room on his couch with his head raised kind of high, like, looking around sort of quietly taking in his living room, really kind of proud, just very, very quiet. All of a sudden, the police kick in his front door, come in there, say, "What happened?" And his family is dead all around him. Mm-hmm. And he's just sitting there like, "I corrected them." I can totally see. He is absolute serial killer material.
Right.
He's completely batshit.
He really is. And I think he gets to join the crazy caucus. I think there's a crazy caucus in the House, and it's not a difficult observation to make about the House of Representatives that there are crazy people in it. But there are three really crazy people, and now I think four, because Alan West belongs with them. And that is Louie Gohmert, Steve King, Michelle Bachmann, and now Alan West.
And West to me is more dangerous because West is a thug. He's ex-military. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who he has this whole sort of, you know, honor thing going. And I wrote about it at the time, and I know that a lot of people have said the same thing too, which is, you know, I try really hard not to play either, you know, to use a bad cliche, the race card, the sexism card. That's usually like the low hanging fruit on the argument tree. And it takes things to an entirely new level and can usually be easily dismissed unless you can 100% prove it. But I mean, West is such a fucking misogynist. Some of the things that he said in the past, some of the things that he's done, I really think his big problem with what Debbie Wasserman Schultz said was that I think he had an issue with the idea that he turns his back and walks out, and how dare she think that she can say those kinds of things to me when I'm not there. You know, I have to get my honor back. It's amazing he didn't challenge her to a fucking duel.
Meanwhile, there's something else I wanted to mention before we wrap up the show, because we're way late at this point. And that is, again, you know, I always debate as to whether I should even bring up shit like this, but he's got such a gigantic audience that we really have to counter this stuff and call attention to it. Rush Limbaugh this week not only denied the existence of global warming, but he denied the existence of heat itself. Now, most of the continental United States is...
That's a very philosophical argument. I like that.
I mean, most
it's like debating whether or not you actually exist. I've disproven that I actually exist.
That's right. I mean, not only are they denying that the debt ceiling will that economic chaos will occur if we don't or if we default on our debt, they're also denying. Here's Rush Limbaugh denying the existence of heat. Listen to this.
This interesting things that we pick up along the way, folks. Before And they're playing games with us on this heat wave again. Even Drudge getting sucked in here. Going to be 116 in Washington. No, it's not. It's going to be like 100.
Maybe yeah, it's only going to be 100. That's not going to be 116, no.
So the weather people are lying to you. They're part of the big conspiracy. God, how difficult it must be to go around life thinking like that. That... completely out to lunch.
Yeah.
That constantly seeing liberal, you know, conspiracies everywhere you go.
And see, the reason I highlight shit like this is because, and the reason you highlight shit like this on your blog is because he's got millions of listeners. I don't know what the size of Limbaugh's audience is. Glenn Beck, for his part, has a radio audience of 10 plus million listeners. That is a lot. So when Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh, when Rush Limbaugh says, I don't know if heat actually exists. 116 degrees, more like 100. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Everyone listening to him goes home that night and goes, hey, you know what? The government's fucking with us on this heat issue. Listen to
this. Index manufactured by the government.
Manufactured by the government.
To tell you what it feels like. When you add the humidity in there, 116. When's the last time the heat index was reported as an actual temperature? It hasn't been, but it looks like they're trying to get away with doing that now. 116, and Drudge is just linking to other people reporting. He's not saying it. I don't want to misunderstand, but he's linking to stories which say 116 degrees in Washington. No, it's, 197, 99? It's going to top out at 102, 103. It does this every year. We have this, there's a heat dome over.
You know, this is un-goddamn believable. This is like suddenly saying, you know, if someone says the phrase, let them eat cake, we're going to deny the existence of cake.
Right. I mean, the most ridiculous part of that to me is that, kind of like I said earlier, how polarized we are, is that you just want to shut it down. Every single thing is now up for debate from a political viewpoint.
That's
it's
right.
All politicized now. I can't tell you anything without, you know, without a very, very large group of people saying, well, you know what, your motives are suspect because you're liberal or you're conservative or you're black or you're white or you're gay or whatever. And it's fucking insane.
Yeah,
it really is.
Well, what's worse about it is that it indicates that, well, I mean, this is actually kind of encouraging. I don't mind this at all. In fact, it shows that they really don't have, or at least I'll say Rush, really doesn't have a solid argument against global warming. If he's resorted to calling into question the existence of heat, I think game, set, match right there.
Right.
I mean, I don't have anything to refute the existence of the climate crisis, so therefore,
it's not really that hot.
There's no heat. There's no such thing.
I want to meet the one like dumbass redneck who, you know, sitting in his pickup truck with no air conditioner and Rush says, you know, it's not really 116. It's actually, you know, 95. And the guy just goes, you know what? I feel better already. I feel great. He's absolutely right. I'm going to go put a coat on.
Right. Imagine if someone in the pro-choice camp were debating abortion. Suddenly, one of us started to say, "Well, you know, I'm one of these fetuses. I've never seen a fetus. No such thing as a fetus." That's just like it's the last resort of a phenomenal moron. And I would say some of what Rush Limbaugh says is put on. I think he falls in that camp of just bullshitting.
I think you're absolutely right because he's a very, very rich moron.
That's right. But, I mean, the danger is that as he bullshits and doesn't claim to be a bullshitter, everyone's going to repeat him. And then suddenly it becomes part of the debate, and we're debating now the existence of fucking heat. It just, it hurts America. Common phrase. Well, welcome to the show, Chaz.
Thank you. This has been fun, and it'll continue to be fun.
Yeah, same time every week. Can't wait for next week.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. And we'll see you next week. Take care, everybody.
So long, folks.